Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Well, we move today from piano music from the British pianist Stephen Huff on All Things Considered to a little jazz from John Ellis, who recently played at the Newport Jazz Festival with his band Double Wide and got great reviews, to here on Keeping the Faith with another pianist actually in our studio today, Michael Hammer. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
And we're going to be talking about how music affects the spirit with Michael, who is a pianist, an accompanist, a blogger who has a wonderful website, pianonoise.com, where you can find about 100 pages of very interesting things that we'll be talking about today. And, of course, so we're eager to have listeners join the conversation. To do that, you may call us at 333-9455 if that's in the 217 area code around Champaign-Urbana here at the University of Illinois where our studio is. Or if you're listening long distance, including online, you may punch in 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, I want to add my voice to the plea for support for this public radio station. If you'd like to make a pledge, 244-9455 in area code 217 or online, willpledge.org. Well, Michael, good to have you here. And I've known you because you've been an accompanist for a group that I've enjoyed singing with called The Chorale. And I got to follow you around a little bit in Europe earlier this summer when you got to play some shall we say challenging instruments?
In
some
of the
Tell us about that. What was that like as a pianist and an organist to suddenly go into a place where you have to give a performance in a few hours and find that the instrument is not what all you had hoped it would be?
Yeah. Well, that's something they don't teach you in music school. I have a page on Piano Noise with a series of entries about different skills musicians should have, and I believe that one would fall under what I call flying by the seat of your pants,
sure.
Which basically is attending the conservatory of life. You don't know what you're going to meet when you get there, and you have to adjust as quickly as you can. In Europe, I played everything from small digital keyboards, some of which did not have the requisite 88 notes. So while we were in concert, I was making decisions about, oh, can't hit that note. We're going to have to move it up an octave, things of that sort, to some very interesting organs. There was an electronic organ in Budapest, and I got to play an older pipe organ in Vienna that I found very interesting. There a couple of the stops were out of tune.
How old was it?
I think that one was sometime in the 19th century. That was as specific as they would tell me.
Sure.
Several of the organs in Europe date from the late 19th century. But I also played one from 1702 in Prague, and that they were very specific about because once an organ gets to be that old, it's polite to tell its age again.
Of course.
Also, this organ had had some illustrious players.
Like who?
Among them, Mozart and Dvorak. So I mixed my finger oil with Mozart this summer, and I've been telling people if they shake my hand, maybe they'll get a little bit of Mozart on them.
Very good. Now, ordinarily, we ought to give people your background a bit. Just like our pianist last week, Susan Teicher, you got your doctorate at Peabody in Baltimore. Tell us,
I did.
Tell us about where you were before that.
Before that, well, I grew up in a small town, largely rural at the time that I was very young, and it's since gotten urbanized. It's a place called Northfield, Ohio. It's a square mile or so, and it's small enough that they had to mash five towns together in order to create a school district of about 1,000 children. It's about 45 minutes southeast of Cleveland or so. It is a nice place to live, but nondescript enough that it would be a bit of a surprise, I guess, if I told you that at the time, billionaire Cyrus Eaton, this is back in the 60s, I think, so anymore he probably would have been a trillionaire by today's standards, had three homes, one of them somewhere in Europe, I think. One of them was in Martha's Vineyard, if I'm getting this right, and the third one was in Northfield, Ohio, for some reason. So a very large farm, we didn't hear much from him, but I went to an elementary school that was named after his daughter because he made a donation to the school system.
How did he make his money?
I think he was a shipping magnate, but I could be wrong. He was a businessman of some success.
Okay. How did you encounter music in Northfield, Ohio?
Well, I grew up, not literally, but in a small white church with a steeple in the countryside. It wasn't exactly like Little House on the Prairie, but, you know, it's sort of tending in that direction.
Protestant?
Yes, Presbyterian. Until I was 17, when I was a grand old man of 13, I started playing the organ in the church.
So you'd been taking lessons from someone in Northfield?
I took lessons from the elementary school music teacher there, and from about the time, I think I was 6. When I was 5, my mother decided piano lessons would be a good idea. Apparently, the story is she saw me rocking on this hobby horse we had or something to the beat of records and decided I had a sense of rhythm and maybe I would have a sense of music. And so I think it was the summer that I turned 5 that we started lessons, and I was, of course, the model 5-year-old. I hope my mother doesn't call in to refute that, but no, I actually was very squirmy, and I did all of the sorts of things that kids do. I didn't want to practice.
How long did that last?
That lasted about a year, and my mother decided that the elementary school music teacher would be qualified to handle the rest of my education. My mother played the piano to the extent to which she could play hymns and so forth, but unlike your guest last week, I didn't really grow up in a musical family per se.
Yes.
My father doesn't play an instrument. As I say, my mother could play hymns a bit.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had a younger brother, 5 years younger, who has played the trumpet.
But he's not a professional musician like you are.
He's not, no.
Okay. Where did you go next to learn music, to study music?
Well, the Cleveland Institute of Music is up the road a little bit. Like I said, we're 45 minutes southeast of Cleveland at this point, and I had never heard of it until I think my junior year.
Of high school.
Of high school. Yeah, I was 16, and we found out about a wonderful thing known as the prep department. I think they have one here at the University of Illinois also for children interested in taking lessons. And one of the advantages is that you may be able to study with faculty members or students of the university.
Sure.
And so I was able then to augment my training to the point where I think I was studying for a couple of years with the student of the one of the faculty members, and then auditioned and went to college there then when I think I was 18 at the time.
So you had to audition to be accepted into, at that point it was the piano
the piano
organ?
Department.
Piano department.
Yeah, actually, you know, at that point I already had a decision to make. I had done some composition, which I continue to do today, but I chose not to audition in that area. I was not really an organist, and I say that meaning that from this, I said when I was 13, I started playing the organ. But I really—
At the church where your family went.
At the church, as a substitute. And I started doing that at various churches around town, too, different denominations and so forth. I wouldn't consider that I was really playing the organ the same way that, say, a University of Illinois organ major would be playing the organ.
Okay.
You know, now, obviously, of course, I was very young also.
Sure.
But by training at that point, I was really more of a pianist.
Okay.
I was playing Bach and Mozart on the piano. I really didn't play very much literature on the organ. My pedal technique was maybe not where it could have been and so forth. And that really continued throughout most of my formal education. So when I went to school, it was entirely as a piano major, and the rest was me goofing off in my spare time, I guess.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith with Michael Hammer. Dr. Hammer is a pianist, an accompanist. He accompanies the Central Illinois Children's Choir. He is a organist at the Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, Illinois, on Prospect Avenue. He is has a great website called pianonoise.com, where you can read his comments, many pages, hear his music. It's almost all free. It's .com, and yet you explain it. You may try to make a little money sometime through that, but currently everything there is free.
It is, yeah. So people, get it while the offer stands, right?
People can listen, they can download, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the music you have there is not copyrighted unless you have permission.
Right.
And you state some of the pieces that are copyrighted, but they've given you permission to have it on your blog.
Mm-hmm.
So, wonderful. So I recommend pianonoise.com. Michael will also be accompanying the Chorale at their concert coming up on November 3rd. That's a Saturday. At 7 p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church, where he's very familiar with both the very good pipe organ and the piano there. That's at 7 p.m. November 3rd, the Chorale. And in addition to Michael's music, we'll hear a former student of violin, Rachel Koblyakov, who's currently a student at Juilliard, is returning to play for that concert. So, choral music, November 3rd on a Saturday. That's a free concert. Although donations will be welcome, happily accepted. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith, and I'm doing a little series here with two pianists, last week Susan Teicher and this week Michael Hammer, talking about how music affects their lives, how the music they produce affects other lives. The spirit of music. We'll be hearing a couple pieces with Michael playing later in this program. Let me remind listeners, you may ask questions, you may call with a comment, 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. If it's long distance, a free, toll-free call, 1-800-222-9455. And again, if you'd like to make a pledge to WILL during this current fall pledge drive, you may call 244-9455, or you may give online at willpledge.org. Very much appreciate people who appreciate these programs, who will make an effort to contribute. Well, Michael, let's talk a little bit about how did you get started 10 years ago with pianonoise.com and writing about music, as well as providing music for people to hear online, free?
Well, I think as I described it, I rolled out of bed one morning and decided it was about time to register a domain name, meaning I'd been putting it off for some time. I'd like to think about things for a while, roll them around in my head, and otherwise procrastinate. I think that's the term that most people use for things like that. This was actually back before it was so popular to have a blog, and I remember actually I did quite a bit of teaching at the time, and I remember one of my piano students' mothers saying that this student was very impressed with me because I had a website, and she used an expression I can't use on the radio, but they thought it was very impressive. And it was early enough, apparently, that the term piano noise hadn't been used by anybody else in the world,
wow.
which is nice because, you know, you really are competing with just about everybody at that point.
Of course.
Nobody else can take that name.
And it's quite memorable.
Apparently, yes. And every time I use it, I tend to get a couple of responses, usually something to the effect that, oh, well, you're if they know my music and they're being polite, oh, your music's not noise. You know, don't worry about it, it's not noise. But I think had I gone into advertising, which is one of several directions I theoretically could have gone in, you know, that's another story. But I think at one point my mother said I should go into advertising because of the way I think and the creativity of my mind and so forth. Had I gone into advertising, maybe I would have had some success because of latching onto terms like that because you – at least it's memorable. It's also probably a bit self-deprecating,
sure.
which I like.
Yeah.
The term noise is a little more all-encompassing than music, which I also like. And if I decide to wander into non-musical waters, which I occasionally do, social and political issues, which I am quick to point out can be safely avoided now if you don't click on the appropriate pages.
And you have a whole section. You have a whole section though on God music, religious music, spiritual
yeah.
music,
mm-hmm.
Christian music mainly.
Yeah.
And of course, you play piano and organ at a Methodist church. So there's a whole section mm-hmm. where you tell people what you're going to mm-hmm. be playing the coming week. They can hear it mm-hmm. in most cases.
Yeah, that came about, I think, it was a bit of a surprise, too. As you say, the site's been around for 10 years, and a lot of things have happened in the meantime. I was a doctoral student at the time.
When you started it.
When I started it. I was a bit out of practice, and audio files were actually just becoming available, so I didn't even have the equipment. And the first things I did initially was I decided to share recordings of music, and I wanted to talk about the composers.
Okay.
But I don't do anything conventionally, so I didn't want to just talk about, you know, Beethoven was born in this year and this is his most famous work.
Right.
I always find some strange angle to, you know, talk about Beethoven's hair or, in this case, literally, you know, what Beethoven really looked like and how that may have changed and things of that sort.
And let me just interject that as someone who's really enjoyed reading what you've written about music and composers and even hot dogs at various ballparks at professional around the country. I love your diversity. I love your sense of humor, and the way you write. It's just very intriguing.
Thank you. That was the earliest strata, I think, of piano noise. It was composer articles, and then I started branching out and talking about other musical topics. The God music section, I think, came along about 3 or 4 years later when I finally discovered the appropriate recording equipment and started on my long odyssey to find a good piano to record on and to learn how to do it and do it well and where to put the microphones. And maybe I've at last gotten to that point. I was just thinking the other day, it's taken me a while to figure out where to stick the microphones. And if somebody had told me where to stick it several years ago, maybe I would have, you know, gotten there a little bit faster, but,
So finding the right piano to record on is one of the big problems.
Yeah, I think so. We have a wonderful 7-foot Steinway now at Faith. And that's
Faith United Methodist Church.
At Faith United Methodist Church, yeah, over on Prospect Road.
And that's almost as big as the 9-foot Concert Grand, right?
It's not billed as the concert model. It's actually billed for home studio use, if you can believe it. And I think right now if you have somewhere between 80 and 100 grand burning a hole in your pocket, you can get one new. Our piano actually is 101 years old this year.
Wow.
It turned 100 sometime last year, the same year I turned 40, and had a birthday celebration and concert on that. And my fantasy is that perhaps the piano and I celebrated our birthdays together. There's about a 1 in 365 chance that actually happened. But it has a really wonderful tone. your guest last week, I'm sure, and most concert pianists seem to agree that there's something about the sound of a Steinway. They're certainly made differently. They're made by hand, and it's a much longer process and much more labor-intensive, which is why they're so expensive. But there's something about the core of a sound that you don't get from most other pianos.
Well, we're just a couple minutes from hearing a recording that Michael has made, and we'll learn more about that in a minute. But let me just take a break here. It's about 20 minutes into our program. And let me tell you what's coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. We've had this little nice mini-series on the spirit of music with two pianists. Next week I'll be traveling, helping perform a wedding in Chicago. And we have a guest host, Professor Danny Otto, who will be interviewing University of Illinois Professor Anhil Bera about the Indian poet, Nobel Prize winner, social reformer, Tagore, T-A-G-O-R-E. There's going to be a Tagore Festival remembering this great writer and thinker and activist here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, coming up. And this will be an introduction to Tagore, for those who don't know of his writing and thought and life. So that's October 28, 2012, here on Keeping the Faith. Coming up in November, Mark Johnson will be our guest November 4th, talking about current books that we all should be considering reading. Mark has done this before here on Keeping the Faith over the years. He's a very widely read and speaks well about books. He's the executive director for the United States for the Fellowship of Reconciliation, the oldest peace organization, ecumenical peace organization in the world. Later in November, Wallace Bubar from Philadelphia by phone will be talking with us about what it's like serving a very interracial church in Philadelphia. Later in December, Laura Frericks, who's the director of the University of Illinois Research Park, will be talking with us about the value of shared knowledge as found at the park. Those are some of the programs coming up ahead on Keeping the Faith. Let me also just remind listeners that this evening, there's a concert at McKinley Presbyterian Church by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. It will feature Michael Tennell, who's now professor of trumpet at the University of Louisville. He'll be playing a hunting horn as part of that concert. It's an instrumental concert. There is a fee for it. I think it's $20 for adults, $10 for students. And that's at 7:30 tonight at McKinley Presbyterian Church on 5th and John Street in Champaign. And I mentioned earlier that coming up on November 3rd, Michael will be playing on piano and organ accompanying The Chorale in their 30th season, Music of the Spheres, at 7 p.m. November 3rd, Saturday, November 3rd, 7 o'clock at Faith United Methodist Church. That's a free concert. And we'll also feature Rachel Koblyakoff on violin, a student that received a sponsorship from the chorale and is currently at Juilliard. Directed by Julie Byler, the chorale will be singing some very interesting music. Well, let's get back to Michael, and let's go fairly quickly now to hearing a piece that he's recorded. We're going to hear Fest. Michael has Festa, I guess we should give it the German pronunciation, Festa. Mm-hmm. And this is a piece composed by Michel Marteau, and it'll be performed for us now on a recording by Michael Hammer. Let's listen to Festa.
Thank you.
Well, we've just heard Festa, a piece based on the familiar hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, Ein Festeberg, composed probably by Martin Luther. This piece, written by Michel Marteau and played by our guest today here on Keeping the Faith, Michael Hammer. Dr. Hammer has a wonderful website, pianonoise.com, where you can find this piece to listen to again, and it's free.
Yeah,
Michael,
actually,
tell us,
it isn't up yet, but by Wednesday. This is going to be next week in church. Next week is Reformation Sunday, and so what better choice? Although obviously this is a bit of an unconventional reading of the familiar hymn, but that's the idea.
Very exciting. And tell us about the rhythm in this in this interpretation, this piece, this composition.
Well, Martin Luther's idea of the hymn and our idea of the hymn might not be entirely the same thing. It's something, I guess, to explain if the arrangement catches people off guard. It's interesting to note sometimes when you go back into the past a little bit. One of my hats is being interested in musical history, and I discovered some time ago that Martin Luther, who is credited for writing the tune, we're not really sure, but he's usually given credit, which is in itself an unusual thing, because to have written the text and the tune of a hymn sort of puts you in the minority. He was writing this in the late Renaissance period, and the tune is actually much more of a dance than what we're used to when we sing it in church. We have this sort of procession of quarter notes, you know.
Bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum. Yeah, exactly. And Martin Luther's tune was actually much more along the lines of bum, 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 bum.
How do you know that?
Well, actually, you go on the web and...
There were recordings then.
Well, he wrote it down, or someone had.
Okay.
By the 15th century.
With what we would call syncopation?
We had music. You know, I'm not sure if it was that they were just a little looser about bar lines or what, but it's really not unusual in the style of the period to kind of have that sort of lilting rhythm.
So it was actually in the notation.
In the notation, yeah. Huh. And you can actually, if you go, I don't know where, I should probably find it again and link to it, but there are ways to hear the original Martin Luther tune. And then perhaps a light bulb will go on. Is, oh, well, okay, maybe that fellow isn't quite as crazy as I thought. It's sort of a jumping off point, I think, then for what happens in the rest of the piece.
And it was Martin Luther, I think, who said, why should the devil have all the good tunes? And, right?
Yeah, and at one point in the hymn, I think he refers to the world being full of devils, so he was quite conscious of a kind of war. Now, I guess in that regard, the text of the hymn, which is where we get the translation, A Mighty Fortress, or maybe more properly, A Mighty Medieval Walled Town, which is really what a burg was, apparently, the image of solidity, the image of defense in war, and so forth.
Protection, safety, sure.
Exactly, yeah. Which is itself a maybe at odds with the music, which sounds much more celebratory. And what I found interesting about that is that the German word Festa, like many words in German and English and any other language, has multiple meanings. And not only can it stand as solid or fortress, it can also mean celebration, as in party, as in festival, and probably where we get that root. And I think maybe that's where this arrangement takes its cue, that there's a sort of a party going on, a little bit more of the kind of image that Jesus would have used in describing the kingdom of heaven, rather than, you know, I don't recall him talking too much about defensive postures in that. And so it's much more of a party.
Now, you have a interest you've mentioned on your website of in theology, not only in God music, but in thinking about God and writing about God, talking about God. what's often called God talk by theologians. How did you, where did this part of your spiritual development come in your life, and how did it fit in when you were at Peabody getting your doctorate in piano performance?
Interesting question. How long is this
I
program?
God knows I try.
Can we go till 7 tonight? Well, I think that in many ways I've tried to combine two elements of my heritage, one of them being the religious heritage. Like I say, I grew up in a little Presbyterian church. I've been playing in churches all my life. The conservatory is really a different animal.
Sure.
I think Dr. Teicher was right last week when she talked about the conservatory being very good at technical things and turning out musicians with excellent technical craft, and frankly, to be able to handle the most challenging music written by the greatest minds of
all time.
It requires a good bit of study. But it not only is there not very much time given to music as a a spiritual development, or for that matter, its effect on us. As she said in a piano lesson that, the piano teacher said, "Well, I'm here to make a pianist out of you and not to talk about the larger issues." And that's been my experience also.
As well, okay.
But also the piano itself, it's kind of an interesting metaphor because it's largely been treated as a secular instrument all of its life too. So while I'm there at the conservatory playing the music of the conservatory's patron saints, Bach and Mozart and so on, and Beethoven and Brahms. Everyone except Bach basically went off into the secular world and created music for concerts and so on. And their piano music, great pianists, all of them, is entirely outside the church.
It's secular.
Yeah.
Sure.
And the antithesis, if I can be so bold, was mutual. At one point, I think in 1903, the Pope actually banned the piano from the Catholic Church.
It was too secular of an instrument.
And it was a noise-making instrument, actually. The way the bull reads, it's something, the piano and noise-making instruments shall not be permitted. Now, it doesn't say other noise-making instruments, but I think if I could, give him some credit, I think maybe what he was doing essentially was, this is 1903. Scott Joplin is writing in the middle of his career, and he may be thinking ragtime and, all that other dance
music from
stuff,
from houses of prostitution. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. And of course, you have all those religious societies speaking out against the dance and things. And, you allow dance music in a church and see what happens.
Sure.
We just heard what happens, right?
Well, I grew up in a church in Urbana where my grandfather was the pastor, where it was understood dancing was of the devil and we were not to dance. I went to a college in the 60s where dancing was prohibited. It was that fundamentalist of a school. So it's not just Catholics, and it's certainly not just 120 years ago.
Yeah, and Methodists were arguing about it apparently in the 30s.
Sure.
Should the piano be permitted in church? It's interesting, really, that it goes to a much larger issue, that how we associate instruments.
Yeah.
Now, acoustically, a piano would probably not get along very well in the average cathedral in Europe either.
Sure.
The sound decay. I've played concerts in there, and it takes 5 minutes for the sound to go away, and you can understand why the organ
works.
Has had such pride of place in the church. But psychologically, the organ at one time wasn't permitted in the church either. Being associated, we think, with the Roman pagan festivals, because the organ is just that old. It goes all the way back to the 3rd century B.C., and it was in a form known as a hydraulis, which was powered by water, and then they discovered you could power it by air. And they would play it in the Roman circus, and the earliest Christians said, well, we can't have that. I mean, if we play the organ, they're going to hear that. So I think maybe what the Pope and others were suggesting at that point was very similar. They heard the piano being used as a secular instrument in places that they associated with sin and debauchery, and they said, no, thank you.
Sure. We're about a couple minutes from hearing another piece that Michael has recorded for his pianonoise.com website, and where you can read his words and blogs and thoughts about theology as well as piano music. We'll be listening to another piece by the same contemporary composer, Michel Marteau. But before we do that, let me just take a break. It's about 20 minutes left of this program, and I need to remind listeners that this is pledge season here at WILL, and whether you're listening on AM 580 or maybe on our wonderful 90.9 FM HD3, where this program is also heard simultaneously, or maybe you're listening online at will.illinois.edu/AM. You can hear the program there. Maybe you're listening on the public radio app on your phone, your portable device. There's so many ways to hear these programs, both the locally produced ones like Keeping the Faith and the ones that we bring in that are so wonderful from National Public Radio. However you're listening and whenever, and there's one other alternative, of course. You can be listening to this as an archive program. But even if it's weeks or even months or years later, you may still donate. You can give by going online to willpledge.org, willpledge.org. And you can find it very easy to give. You may use Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express. You can also find there a way to send a check if you'd like to mail a check to the station. There's so many ways to give. And currently you may call 217-244-9455 to make a pledge. It is very important that we get so much of our support with the diminished support from the state, from the federal government. And of course, there are threats even to that these days. So individual support is so important. We of course, appreciate corporate sponsorship, but individuals really are our lifeblood here on WILL. So I encourage listeners who enjoy Keeping the Faith and other programs, find them valuable to your life, to make a contribution. Please do it now. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these programs. And today we have as our guest Michael Hammer. He's the pianist and organist at Faith United Methodist Church. He's the accompanist for the Central Illinois Children's Choir, and he accompanies the Chorale, which will be having a concert Saturday, November 3rd, 2012, a celebration of life, Music of the Spheres, 7 p.m. Faith United Methodist Church on Prospect in Champaign, conducted by Julie Byler. There'll be a special violinist, Rachel Koblyakoff from Juilliard. She had received a scholarship. She's a local young woman who received a scholarship from the chorale for her further musical education. And also tonight, there's a good concert. The chorale concert is free November 3rd. The one tonight costs a little bit, $20 for most folks. Students can get in for $10, featuring works by J.S. Bach and Telemann. The featured guest soloist is Professor Michael Tunnell from University of Louisville. And he's a professor of trumpet there, but he's playing the hunting horn tonight. That's at McKinley Presbyterian Church on 5th and John at 7:30 tonight. You can finish listening to Keeping the Faith and hear Michael Hammer's work and then go on to hear that. Well, let's hear another piece played by Dr. Michael Hammer. Again, this one is called Breath, based on another familiar tune, Breathe on Me, Breath of God, by the contemporary composer Michel Marteau. Thank you. I could just feel the winds coming over the prairie, sometimes gently, sometimes with much more force. We've just heard Breath, played by Dr. Michael Hammer, our guest in the studio today, talking about the spirit of music and what could be more appropriate for that title than a contemporary piece by Michel Marteau called Breath, which in Hebrew, the word ruach means both breath and spirit, and in Greek, the word pneuma means both breath and spirit. Mm-hmm. Thanks for choosing that.
Well, thank you.
When did you record it?
I think about 3 or 4 years ago.
Where was the recording made?
Pogo Studios right here in Champaign.
Champaign-Urbana. How long have you lived in Champaign-Urbana?
7 years now, I think. I got here in 2005.
What brought you to these twin cities?
Well, my wife, Kristen, is studying for an MD, PhD. And if that sounds a little ambitious, it is.
It's might take a while.
2 degrees. Yes. Yeah, and they don't run concurrently. So it's about a 10-year program, something in that neighborhood.
Wow.
So she's working through her dissertation right now.
So you followed her here, and as a professional musician, you set about trying to find a way to earn a living.
I did.
In a place where there's a school of music and a lot of musicians. Mm-hmm. How tough was it?
Well, the summer I came, Faith United Methodist Church over on Prospect Road was looking for an organist. And so I interviewed in late June, and my first Sunday with them was World Communion Sunday. This is the first Sunday of October. So I got here in August, so I was unemployed for about a month, but then I settled right in.
But many church music positions are not really full-time, and you needed more probably money than that, so you've done some other things as well. Tell us about other things.
Well, I've done a good bit of accompanying. It seems like every time I move, I sort of reinvent myself a little bit. And the theme of this decade seems to be choir accompanying. I have 4 choirs, I think. Let's see if I lose count. I accompany 2 different organizations, the Central Illinois Children's Chorus, which actually consists of 4 choirs, and I play for 3 of them. There's an elementary school age choir, a middle school and high school age more advanced choir, and something they call the Youth Chorale, which is a smaller group of generally juniors and seniors. And then I play for adults, as you mentioned, the Chorale, which is a wonderful community organization of, I think, about 70 or 80 singers. And so between the 2 of those groups, they keep me pretty busy. I also accompany the church choir and play for the church band. So I think that's something like 6 or 7 organizations.
And you're also in a rock band playing keyboards of various sorts, right?
That's true also, yes. The Gavin Stolte Project, which has gigs around town.
What kind of music is it? I said rock. I don't really know.
That's a pretty good umbrella term. We have various things in a repertoire. Occasionally we'll dip into a little bit of country, and sometimes it gets kind of heavy. But I think generally kind of pop rock. Our bass player, Gavin Stolte, does a lot of his original tunes also.
Now, you're a composer as well as a performer, and tell me about the contemporary composer that you've brought us samples of tonight, Michel Marteau. I've never heard of this man.
Yes. I think a former pastor of mine had a similar dilemma. I started at a church in Baltimore playing Marteau, I think back in 2004, and apparently he Googled this individual and was not able to find much information about him, strangely enough. I'm not sure what happens now if you Google it. You may find the same thing that happens to me sometimes, but I'll be Googling something, looking desperately for information, and the first result that pops up is my own website.
I see.
Which is both a thrill and a, you know, thank you very much. It's not going to help me to find it. But people who know French may already be a little bit ahead of us. But we do bear some relation to one another.
So marteau means hammer in French.
It does. There's actually a famous piece. I will butcher the French anyway, but it translates as the hammer without master by a fellow named Pierre Boulez. That might come up in a Google search.
Uh-huh. So these are pieces that you've composed based on hymn tunes. When did you write the one on based on A Mighty Fortress Is Our God that you're going to be playing next Sunday?
Yeah, well, that one's dated from August. Actually, it's kind of a work in progress. I'm not entirely sure whether it's finished yet. I was thinking about that on Friday when I made the recording. You know, one of the wonderful things about living in the 21st century with all this equipment is you can just make a recording, put it out there.
And it's on the radio, and it'll be on your blog, on your website soon.
Yeah, very quickly. That one is still, I think, trying to find its form. I've been thinking that I might have to make it the first piece that I publish with footnotes.
Okay.
You know, not in terms of a critical edition, but in terms of, you know, some ancient manuscripts read, and you go down to the bottom of the page, and instead of playing this line, you know, let's play something else from, or you know, should there be three beats in this measure, or should there be two beats in this measure? You know, because I'm just that picky. You know, I find if I do something small in one part of the piece, it really affects how I perceive the rest of it. So,
I do some preaching in congregations that are without pastors, just as a fill-in on Sundays. And I've been down at the First Presbyterian Church of Mattoon for several months. They're about to get their official interim pastor, who will be there full time, but I'll be there another couple weeks. And I've been impressed with the organist there. He's getting his doctorate here at the University of Illinois, Kevin Chunko, and I complimented him on one of his postludes a couple of weeks ago and asked him who'd written the piece, and he said, "Well, I actually was improvising that," and you know, it was a marvelous, marvelous piece. And again, this Sunday, this morning, we were having some technical problems because I was going to be showing some slides of an artist fit in with my sermon, and he was playing the prelude, and he could tell we were having difficulty setting up the machinery, and so he just extended it flawlessly, seamlessly, and when I told him we were ready to start by just a simple hand gesture across my throat, he just brought it to a nice little end, and it's a wonder that. Tell us about improvisation, whether in church or in a rock group.
One of the requirements of being a church musician, I think, and that's really one of the places it's gotten its start. Of course, jazz pianists do a great deal of it also.
Of course.
And as I say, the patron saints of the conservatory, Bach and Mozart and Beethoven, were all great improvisers. What is so ironic is that when you get to music school, they don't teach you about improvisation. And so many people read but don't improvise. To be a church musician and to be able to deal with everything from the emergency situation that you described to just the fact that every week there's new music to be played. And, you know, at the conservatory, you'll spend months working on a single recital program. There's no time. So being able to improvise is a great help. And it's just grown up and been part of the tradition, I think, particularly among European organists for centuries.
Well, we have reached the end of our time, and I want to thank you for improvising in this discussion we've had about the spirit of music and talking about playing the piano and the organ and composing and having a wonderful website, pianonoise.com. We've been talking with Dr. Michael Hammer. His PhD is Doctor of Musical Arts, I guess it is, DMA, from Peabody in Baltimore, and connected with Johns Hopkins University. And he accompanies the chorale in their performances, one of which is coming up Saturday, November 3rd at Faith United Methodist Church, where Michael also plays piano and organ for their choir. The chorale concert is free. There will be an opportunity for people to make donations to the chorale, which is in its 30th year under the direction of Julie Beiler. Violinist Rachel Koblyakoff, a local young woman who's been studying at Juilliard, will be playing the violin as well. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, will be a guest host, Professor Danny Otto from Eastern Illinois University, who has been a guest on this program in previous years. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, talking about the Amish, he will be interviewing Professor Anil Bera of the U of I about Tagore. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Supporting WILL doesn't have to break the bank, and every gift counts. You can become a sustaining member with a continuous monthly gift of just $5 or $10. That adds up to significant.